Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So how surreal was it yesterday? And I don't know if you were paying attention to the news yesterday, but when Donald Trump, who had run for president on the idea that Islam hates us, he used those words, and on banning all Muslims from entering the United States, even as visitors, how surreal was it that he gave his first foreign speech as president in Saudi Arabia yesterday, a speech billed as an address to the Muslim world? And to my ear, his words lived up or lived down to that surreal context. The only reason Trump even thinks about Islam is because of the terrorist threat to Americans from groups like ISIS and Al-Qaeda. But he lectured Muslim nations as if he was a father scolding his children for not being able to take care of themselves.
A better future is only possible if your nations drive out the terrorists and drive out the extremists. Drive them out. Drive them out of your places of worship. Drive them out of your communities. Drive them out of your holy land. And drive them out of this earth.
As if he had to tell them about the dangers in their own countries. Drive them out, like lock her up at Trump rallies and the Republican convention. But no one yesterday was chanting along. Did he think they would? And as if terrorism came from nowhere, he went right on to promise the monarchs and dictators of the Middle East that no longer would the United States lecture them about democracy, like Presidents Obama and Bush did. All we have is shared security concerns.
For our part, America is committed to adjusting our strategies to meet evolving threats and new facts. We will discard those strategies that have not worked and will apply new approaches informed by experience, talent, and judgment. We are adopting a principled realism rooted in common values, shared interests, and common sense.
Translation, we're not going to push your monarchs and dictators for your human rights. Donald Trump in his speech in Saudi Arabia, maybe you missed it because it was Sunday morning or early afternoon New York time. He's now landed in Jerusalem. We'll talk about that too with Susan Glasser, Politico's chief international affairs columnist. She was formerly editor of Foreign Policy magazine. She also hosts Politico's new weekly podcast, The Global Politico. Thanks for doing this, Susan. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you today.
I think the Saudi Arabia speech is generally getting mixed reviews, a little better than what I just gave it, like it could have been worse. So what's your reaction?
Well, look, I think everything you need to know in a way about Donald Trump's foreign policy is the fact that he has broken with precedent and really anybody's expectation by visiting Saudi Arabia of all the countries in the world first. Traditionally, U.S. presidents go to Canada first. George Bush broke with that, but he went to Mexico. Also, they do it a lot sooner than in May of their first year. And to me, that image, as much as the speech, I think the image of Donald Trump dancing with the Saudi sheikhs in this sort of all-male dance party atmosphere, it just sort of summed up where we are. I don't know if there will be a lasting shift as a result of this. Remember, the United States has been more or less a partner and an ally with Saudi Arabia for decades. And so it's not a radical shift in our policy, but it certainly sends a very stark message about human rights and values, as you pointed out.
You mentioned the men-only dance party. There was also the men-only concert given by Toby Keith, of all people. And I gather that that Donald, with Melania, drove by in a cart and looked at some image of it. I guess they didn't actually go in, but he didn't say anything about it. I mean, I'm not sure which is worse. President Bush cloaked his invasion of Iraq, which was for U.S. national security purposes, in the language of democracy. The Muslim world saw through him. Now Trump abandons even the veneer of democracy as a value he cares about, as long as the Muslim world helps us fight our enemies. I don't know which is worse. And yet the Saudis and the Gulf states generally are set to see an opportunity with Trump that they didn't find with Obama. With your knowledge of foreign policy, can you explain that?
Well, first of all, I think that's an important point for people to understand. The disillusion with Barack Obama was real. It was across the Middle East, in Israel, as well as in the Gulf states, and in many traditional partners in the United States, who actually were clamoring not for the United States to get out of the Middle East, but for the United States in many ways to lead more than it did. And they really didn't like that. And they also really didn't like, of course, Barack Obama's opening to Iran. And a lot of this is about what Saudis and many of the other Gulf states see as their real enemy and their real problem in the region, which is their political competition with Iran. And they saw Barack Obama as someone who was opening up and potentially changing the balance of power in the region. So they see that Trump, even if he doesn't deliver on these grandiose promises of peace in the Middle East and things like that, that at least he's going to tilt American foreign policy back towards its traditional allies and perhaps help them out in their competition. Remember the WikiLeaks cables that were leaked from the Obama administration, in which the Saudi king was saying, you've got to cut off the head of Iran like a snake. And I think that tells you a lot about the motivations of why Trump is getting this over-the-top, lavish reception in the Middle East.
And yet, that was another weird thing to me about the speech, the way he explicitly demonized Iran, Saudi Arabia's rival and military enemy in the region. So, as you just explained, Saudi has an interest in Trump doing that, the Saudi Arabia does. But it happened to be 2 days after Iran had just re-elected a president, Rouhani, who ran against the Ayatollahs on a platform of outreach to the West. So did Trump even know he was biting an extended hand from the country that he was standing there trashing?
Well, I guess, first of all, they don't see it as an extended hand. Second of all, they've made a decision. They made that decision early on and haven't wavered from it, that in some ways, opposition to Iran and doubling down on America's traditional alliances in the region is the way they're going to go. And, you know, it did seem really odd and off-putting. You have the Americans lecturing Iran, in fact, on its violations of human rights and other things. At the same time, they're being hosted by the Saudis and never mentioning the lack of freedom of speech or the many human rights violations documented by our own government in Saudi Arabia. And so, of course, that tends to underline what Middle Easterners have long thought of American foreign policy, which is that it's filled with hypocrisy and that we criticize human rights violations or talk about democracy only when it suits us and not as a consistent policy. Now, Trump, by flip-flopping to such an extreme degree, undermines further, I would say, the power of any kind of American rhetoric or any kind of American bully pulpit in the region. He doesn't have a lot of credibility, to say the least, since we don't actually know what he really thinks.
Susan Glasser with us, Politico's chief international affairs columnist, as we talk about Trump's trip to, so far, Saudi Arabia and Israel. He's in Israel now. We'll get to that part. 212-433-WNYC and Robert in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning to you both. Well, he sounded like a hypocrite to me. I'm sorry to say that. But he was reading from a prepared speech that he didn't believe himself. And it sounded to me, it came across to me like he didn't believe it. And anybody in that room, I know they didn't believe it. And as far as the Saudis, they've gotten $150 billion in hardware. You know, so they came out with all of the grandiose, make it all beautiful and played on his ego. And I was just stunned by it. And the same thing on the tarmac of Israel. When he was reading, he was just reading like, I'm here. But it takes away from his personality when he has to read something or read off a teleprompter.
Robert, thank you. That's really interesting about, did they even believe it? Did he even believe it as he was reading from the speech? And if it was obvious that he didn't believe it, how could they believe he believed it? And to that point, I want to play one more what I considered weird moment from the Saudi Arabia speech. Before he delivered it, Susan, you probably saw this, the networks that were carrying the coverage were saying General McMaster, the national security advisor, had talked Trump out of using the phrase radical Islamic terror and Islamic extremism, as he made such a point of doing in the campaign, because it seems to insult the whole region rather than just insult the extremists. He was supposed to say Islamist, which refers to the ideological fringe, not all of Islam, like Islamic. But when he got to that line in the speech, he couldn't get it out of his mouth that way. Listen.
That means honestly confronting the crisis of Islamic extremism and the Islamicists and Islamic terror of all kinds.
He couldn't say it. He couldn't even say it. Was that just sloppy teleprompter reading, or was it a dog whistle to his base that wants to marginalize and demonize all of Islam?
Well, who knows, right? We can't get inside his head. Interestingly enough, one of Trump's advisors on background told reporters on the trip yesterday that the president was just tired and slipped up. Now, that's quite striking when you think that that was day one of a 9-day grueling five-city tour that Trump has embarked on as part of this trip. And remember, why is he exhausted? He's flown out of the maelstrom here in Washington. Really, the last 2 weeks have been almost a complete and utter meltdown in many ways of the White House that was already having difficulty functioning. Now there's a widening FBI investigation, firing of the FBI director. Trump is doing what many presidents have done in the midst of scandal over the years, flying off to be a statesman, to get a red carpet reception and the like. But he never liked traveling, even under the best of circumstances. So, you know, he flew into sort of the most positive reception he's likely to get at the very beginning of the tour. And there are already signs of fatigue and wearing on a guy who's absolutely brand new to international diplomacy. So I think that's something else to watch as the trip unfolds.
Ahmad in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ahmad.
Yes, Sarah. How you doing, Brian?
Okay.
Nice show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question. Saudi Arabia, I'm neutral here. Saudi Arabia, I'm from the Middle East. Saudi Arabia started to attack Trump with $400 billion deal to put pressure in Iran and break a peace deal between the Israeli and the Palestinian. My question is, if there is a deal that the Russians were involved in this deal, and I remember the foreign minister was telling Mr. Kerry, the Secretary of State, we're not going to go back and forth with this deal. If we cannot make this deal, nobody call me on Tuesday. So when we see that the American, the Saudi trying to attract Mr. Trump, it's like the deal is being signed with the American and European Union without the Russian. We are excluding the Russian like this.
That's an interesting question. I mean, on the Saudis, and Ahmad, thank you. Susan, Trump rattled off a list of extremist groups like Hamas and Hezbollah, as well as ISIS and al-Qaeda. But he said nothing about the underlying Wahhabism, which is rooted in and promoted internationally by the Saudis. Most of the 9/11 hijackers were Wahhabist Saudis, as you know. That also made me shake my head like the whole thing is an act. Can we fight Islamic extremism? Oh, now I did it. Can we fight Islamist extremism without addressing the role of Saudi Arabia and its Wahhabist ideology that's practically the official state religion?
Look, the bottom line is most experts believe that the answer is no, just like they believe that it's very difficult to go to war against an ideology because it's an idea and it will take root in different forms, which, of course, is what's happened. You defeat al-Qaeda, as Barack Obama crowed he did, by killing Osama bin Laden. Something new, like the Islamic State, rises up because it's an ideology. And, of course, it spreads very rapidly in this technological moment. I think the question of Trump and his specific policy toward the Saudis is one. Remember, this has come up from the very beginning of his administration with his executive order, which he never talks about anymore, that was going to ban anyone from coming in from seven different primarily Muslim countries on the pretext given was to stop potential terrorists from coming into the country. But of course, Saudi Arabia wasn't on the list.
Yeah.
Egypt wasn't on the list. And it seemed very much like
another one that produced 9/11 hijackers.
Well, that's Egypt. Right. And again, it just underlines America already had a pretty robust reputation for hypocrisy in the Middle East. And now that you have a president who literally has flip-flopped on what other people would consider to be issues of core principle And so none of us really knows what he actually thinks.
So before you go, give me a thought on stop two of his trip in Israel, which our last caller, Ahmad, was also referring to. I see Trump is alienating some politicians who are to the right of Netanyahu by Trump bringing up his desire to make an Israeli-Palestinian deal. The hard right doesn't want a deal. What do you see as the dynamics of that part of the trip if Trump is talking deal as well as support for Israel?
Well, again, Israel is another place where expectations for Donald Trump's presidency were sky high. And that may seem surprising here in a U.S. context where he's very unpopular, but he was extremely popular across a large swath of the Israeli population, in part because he talked tough and said he was going to be the biggest supporter of Israel ever. And he said he was going to move the embassy to Jerusalem and a lot of things that he hasn't done and doesn't seem like he's going to be doing. And so I think the Israeli right in particular had outsized expectations that Donald Trump, rather than being sort of a new honest broker for Middle East peace with the Palestinians, was basically going to come in and tilt the scales in their favor and stop pulling a Barack Obama and lecturing them and trying to force them to make concessions that they don't want to make for a two-state solution that they're not really committed to. And so they thought Trump was going to be a certain kind of president, and their expectations were off the charts. And now, of course, reality is sinking in for the White House, which has moved away from its most extreme pledges, and for these Israeli right-wingers who are not getting the president that they thought.
Well, here it could get interesting, and I'm actually curious to see how Trump might roil the usual politics there if he actually is interested in pushing the idea of a deal. Susan Glasser, Politico's chief international affairs columnist. She was formerly the editor of Foreign Policy magazine and also hosts Politico's new weekly podcast, The Global Politico. You want to plug the podcast? I see you have John Podesta.
Yeah, you know, John Podesta was a pretty fun interview this week. I was trying to think, how do we talk about all this Comey stuff and try to explain it for an audience that's international as well as national? And went to see Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman. He really unloaded on Trump, which was interesting. Of course, it's his hacked emails that are at the base of this FBI investigation. Interestingly, though, a lot of people here in Washington are talking impeachment all the time. He said, forget it for now. Republicans are stuck to Trump like Velcro, and unless there's major new revelations or a 2018 election debacle, he didn't see them moving forward with the I word anytime soon. But it was a really interesting conversation, and you know, I'm delighted to join the world of audio interviewers, Brian. You're the gold standard, but it's been really fun to do these interviews every week. Every Monday we have a new one.
Welcome. I'm going to go listen after the show.
Thanks.
Thanks for joining us. Susan Glasser from Politico, Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.